Welcome to the Bandit About podcast series. My engine room guest was around the age of 7 or 8 when he received his first set of drums. His love of the band Kiss initially inspired his desire to play. And he moved to South Australia from Mackay in 1991 after hearing that South Australia had a healthy rock scene, which at the time it did. Before I introduce my guest, it's time for me to play the fabulous Bandit About theme song, which was written and recorded for the Bandit About podcast series by the very talented Catherine Lambert and Michael Mitzi Bryant. It is with great pleasure that I welcome John McDermott. Welcome, John, and thank you for making the time to chat with me today.
Thank you, Di. Thanks for inviting me.
Not a problem. Okay, John, let's start from the beginning. Where were you born?
I was born in Mackay, Queensland. Some people might not know where that is. It's if you were to drive from Brisbane, you would be in a car for about 12 or 13 hours north. Technically, it's North Queensland, but around here where the Whitsundays are. That's where I grew up. My father was a cane farmer, grew sugar, and mum was a teacher's aide.
Do either of your parents have a musical background or anyone else in the family?
No, and I've always been befuddled by this, I guess. I think it's an advantage to a lot of the world's best musicians often had, you know, musical parents or other musical siblings, and I was the black sheep in the family. I think mum played a little bit of piano, but once she had us kids, she gave that away. So there was a piano in the house. My sister learnt for a while, but I never saw my mother play piano. Dad, being a farmer, didn't have time to play a musical instrument. They were both good dancers. They were actually, I think, were approached to teach ballroom dancing, you know, the old-time waltzes and Pride of Erin's and gypsy taps and foxtrots and all that sort of stuff, which was common dance styles back in the day. So I think they certainly had rhythm. I think they probably just didn't have the opportunity. No, I was definitely a black sheep in the family.
All right. So what led to or who influenced you to start playing drums?
I have always put it down to seeing Kiss on TV, and I distinctly have this memory of me seeing them on TV, and I think probably I was seduced by the whole kind of superhero vibe that they had with them, with the makeup and all that. And I think as a kid, I think that the secret to their success, you know, they were so appealing to young listeners and viewers because it was such a visual thing. But I remember seeing them on TV and thinking there and then, I said, that's what I want to do. Thought that was the most amazing thing I'd ever seen. I was totally hooked. I had little toy drum kits, I think from the age of 3 or 4, went through a couple of them, wore them out.
How old were you? Received your first set of drums?
My first proper functional drum kit was like a, you know, junior kit, and around the age of 7 or 8, I reckon I was. And then I got an upgraded model around the age of 12, which was a huge kit. The shell sizes for me, and I was a pretty small 12-year-old, like it was a 24-inch bass drum and 13, 14, 18-inch toms, so it kind of towered over me.
So was music taught at the school that you went to?
No, I think, and we did recorder, year 7.
Yeah.
The school I went to at the time only went to year 10 because it's a small country town. They didn't have music as a subject in high school. I then went to another school, sitting on a bus for a long time, there and back to do year 11 and 12. I didn't do music there as well. I can't even remember if they had a proper music program there either. So, yeah, I've always kind of felt that I probably had a fairly sheltered upbringing musically. I certainly didn't have a lot of exposure that kids today have in the school system.
So did you teach yourself?
I was predominantly self-taught. Mm. I think from around the age of 8, I had a handful of lessons, which meant my parents driving me 60 k's or 120 k's round trip from home to Mackay for a drum lesson once a week. And I think I only had about 8 lessons with this guy, and he just sort of taught me the basics. I remember jumping in the car after a lesson and telling Dad this joke, which was fairly inappropriate. I can't remember the joke itself. He said, "Where did you learn that?" And I said, "Oh, my drum teacher taught me." And he said, "Well, right, we're not doing drum lessons with him anymore." And they said, "Oh, have a go teaching yourself." And I thought, "Oh, I'll give it a go." So from then on, I was predominantly self-taught by just playing along to albums.
Yeah. So what was the first band that you joined?
The first band, I was probably 17. One of those really cheesy names when you can't think of a name for a band. I think it was called Easy Target or something like that. It was just a covers band. Pretty much every band in Mackay at the time was a covers band. You've got your rock bands there, of course, as well, but it's not a huge music scene.
Can you remember your first gig?
My first paid gig, I reckon I was about 13, and it was in Caelan, in the little one-horse town. And I think it was me and a school friend of mine playing guitar and some old duck on a piano. And I think we were just asked to join this piano player to play for the local dance. I think they just wanted a bigger sound than just trying to dance to a piano. So
yeah.
They wanted a bit more rhythm. I think that was my first pay gig, and I think I got $25 and I thought I was loaded. My neighbour was quite a good singer and used to play in a country and western band, and I used to do a few fill-in gigs, and I was probably about 15 at the time. So that was good exposure to the world of, you know, learning songs by ear, being thrown in the deep end. I would just sort of fill in when the drummer couldn't do a gig. So, yeah, my neighbour had a hand in getting me started. So it was about the age of 15, I think.
Okay. So when did you come to Adelaide?
I came to Adelaide in 1991. Where I actually grew up is a small town called Caelan, which is about 60 k's north of Mackay. So it's one of those kind of towns, if you blink, you'll miss it. So Mackay was the nearest metropolis to me. But once I'd finished school, I actually did an apprenticeship as an electrician at the electricity board up there, which is kind of the equivalent of what ETSA was.
Yeah.
And during that time, I was playing in a variety of different bands. You know, started out with cover bands, you know, just playing pop covers, and joined a blues band. Then I found myself in a progressive rock band. After a while, we were doing gigs around Mackay, but Mackay being what it is, progressive rock doesn't really have much of a market. We'd heard that there was, and probably got via Carrier Pigeon, but we'd heard that there was a really healthy rock scene in Adelaide,
mm-hmm.
and there was. So we all kind of moved down here with stars in our eyes and delusions of grandeur and thought we'd become rock stars in Adelaide. So we all sort of packed up and moved down here to try and crack the scene here back in 91. So it was a 5-piece band, but we left our singer, who's also the lead guitarist in Mackay. He wanted to study classical guitar because the conservatorium in Mackay was just about to open.
Mm-hmm.
It was kind of a staggered exodus to Adelaide because I had to finish an apprenticeship as an electrician after school. I had to finish that before I came down, but the other were already down here for a year. Yeah, so 4 of us came here, and then we started auditioning singers, and we were from a country town. We didn't know what we were doing. We had no idea. We didn't know anyone in the industry, and we rehearsed every week. And after a while, I think we all kind of got jaded with things not happening for us. We didn't know how to promote the band. We had no idea. We were pretty green. Yeah, eventually the band disbanded, and it was kind of reverse exodus. The rest of the band, one by one, went back to Mackay because they missed family or fishing or whatever it was that they wanted to go back for. And I loved it here. I kind of felt at home, so I decided to stay.
And you ended up going to university here.
Yes, it wasn't long after that I decided to audition for the course. I was pretty green when it came to jazz. I'd had lessons in Mackay, a guy named Ray Aegis, who was probably the only jazz drummer in Mackay. Yeah, I was about 19 and I had a few lessons with him, and he sort of helped me out with technique that I was doing wrong, got me reading again. Probably 6 months before the audition in Adelaide, I could barely play a swing feel, so I sort of practiced pretty hard before the audition. Yeah, that was 94, I think, that I started uni.
And you were to go on and end up doing your Master of Philosophy in Music Performance.
Yeah, that was a little bit spread out. So I did my honours degree in 97,
mm.
and then there was a bit of downtime between study then. I was sort of just playing around town, doing gigs and teaching and stuff like that. There was a bit of a sea change in there as well. I went back to Queensland for about 5 years from 2007 to 2012 to be closer to family for a while. I went and lived in Brisbane for 5 years. When I got back to Adelaide from Brisbane in 2012, I decided I might do a master's degree.
Excellent. What was your first major gig over here in South Australia?
I reckon halfway through uni, maybe 95, I started working with Mark Ferguson, and he was putting bands together. Up until then, I was just sort of playing with whoever would have me. You know, a lot of bands being slapped together for different things. But Mark Ferguson kind of had a vision and was into writing a lot of his own stuff. A lot of it was sort of very Latin-influenced as well. Maybe he saw something in my playing that he liked when I was at uni. He was a part-time lecturer there at the time. Of course, he's the head of jazz there now. And so that's where I started my association with Mark, and that's probably when I started getting a lot busier. Probably my major gig, I think, was with Mark.
Do you have a memorable gig story, good or bad, that you'd like to share?
Probably one of the most memorable would have been with Mark, his band Marmalade Circus. And that was a 10-piece band. It had Steve Todd on percussion, and we had a few horns, and I think Mark's wife Susan was singing as well. Probably the biggest crowd I've ever played to. I think most of us in the band is the biggest crowd we'd ever played to. We were invited to perform at Jazz in the Domain at the Sydney Festival.
Mm.
It's in that area where they have the carols in the Domain. I think there was a crowd of 80,000 people there, and I think there were four bands on. There was like a trio and then a quintet, and then us, and then I think the headline was the Sydney All-Star Big Band was featuring Maria Schneider as the composer, conductor mm-hmm. for that band. But that was a pinch-yourself moment, I reckon, playing to a crowd that size. Yeah, that's probably one of the most memorable gigs I've done. I was listening to your interview with Steve Todd, and he kind of stole my thunder, and I have to agree with him, pinch-yourself moments. His interview, him talking about working with John English and Peter Couples. I owe Steve a debt of gratitude for when I moved to Brisbane, because around the time Steve was working at the Police band, Peter and John were doing some shows up in Brisbane. Peter is based in Brisbane. And Steve said, look, my mate John's just moved to Brisbane. You know, maybe he could fill in for me, give him a go. Yeah, so that sort of started a few performances for me with Peter and John for the ones that Steve couldn't do.
Yeah.
And particularly the ones around southeast Queensland. And I did a few other tours, I think, to New South Wales and Tasmania and Perth with them as well for the time that Steve was with the Police band. One of the gigs we did in Perth, this is memorable for all the wrong reasons. Brisbane's known for its continual roadworks. Anyway,
what, like Adelaide?
Yeah, but worse.
Didn't think there was anything worse than South Road.
Yeah, it's not the greatest. Yeah, Brisbane can be pretty bad. But anyway, because of the roadworks, I was supposed to catch a flight over to Perth. The other guys were already going to be over there for this gig, playing at a restaurant. They used to put on a lot of well-known Australian bands. I think if Mental's Anything were playing there the week before us. Jojo Zep was going to be there as well. Quite a well-known restaurant over there. Its name escapes me now, of course. But anyway, I missed my flight, and this took years off my life. I was so stressed about it. I had to get on the next available flight. Got there, got in the cab. I said, look, just fang it, mate. If you get a speeding fine, I'll pay it. I just need to be at this restaurant. So I get there, and there's a backline drum kit that's not set up, so I had to set it up as well. All the punters were kind of waiting outside in the line, essentially waiting for me to set up, do a quick sound check, and then we're playing, you know. So my heart's beating 100 miles an hour. But, I mean, the other guys, John and Peter, were so chilled about it all, and it's obviously happened to them in their career as well. That's certainly a memory that I won't forget. Performing with, like Steve said in his interview, it was just an amazing experience, probably a highlight in my career, working with John and Peter. During my time in Brisbane, I would sometimes do some duo gigs with Peter as well as band stuff, him on his own. And that also turned into a Southeast Queensland tour with Peter and Rick Price and Jenny Morris. So that was a great experience up there as well.
Excellent. Is there a band that you wish that you'd had the opportunity to play with?
If I had to whittle it down, I would probably say Tower of Power. That would be an amazing experience to play with them.
I don't think you're the only one that would say that, yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You'd certainly know you're alive.
John, how do you prepare yourself before a show?
Physically, if I'm preparing for a show, often do some stretches if there's time. And if I'm in the mood to, depending on the degree of difficulty of the gig, how physical the gig is, I would, you know, if I know I'm going to be hitting hard for a fair while or it's fairly intricate playing, I'll definitely do some practice pad warm-ups. But I'm into stretching. I was struck down with tendonitis in my early 20s, which is one of those things that you have to manage and it stays with you for life. So, yeah, always stretch when I can before a gig, but then I'll do practice pad work as well. As far as the nuts and bolts for preparing for a gig, if it's a show that I'm doing, they'll sometimes email charts. I'll have a listen to whatever tracks they'll be playing while I'm following the charts. Sometimes the nature of drum charts is that they're often just a guide. Sometimes they're an exercise in bar counting. And so sometimes there's information on the chart that's missing. So I might go through and pencil some things. Might be horn figures that need to be added to a chart, play along to the tracks. For gigs where there isn't charts, I've got this process where it's almost like musical shorthand. I'll just scratch out a chart on a manuscript paper, which is still, for me, way faster than using programs like Sibelius. That's generally the process.
Okay. John, how has the pandemic impacted you?
Not massively, because, I think we've all been affected by it. As far as gigs go, for me, the biggest kind of kick in the guts was just as in the beginning, when everything was sort of getting locked down, I was contracted to do School of Rock, the touring musical, the mm-hmm. touring production of that. My late great friend Colin Elmer, him and I were flown over to Sydney to sit in the pit and learn the show over there before COVID hit. Funnily enough, we were having a drink outside the Opera House and there was this massive cruise liner parked in the bay.
Was that the Ruby Princess?
No, it wasn't the Ruby Princess, one of the Norwegian ones, I think. Colin and I had a laugh about it later once COVID had hit, because we were looking at the ship and Colin was saying, do you know, this is the fastest growing tourism sector in the world.
Mm.
Yes, it quickly became the slowest growing. But, yeah, anyway, the School of Rock, they were bumping into festival theatre. They, knowing that they would pull the pin at any second, it was literally an 11th hour call where the production were sort of pleading with the SA government to let them go ahead, and they were saying, look, what if we space out seating? They had to set up, you know, all the props and the staging and everything in case the government said, yep, go ahead, knowing full well that, you know, they could also say no. So they started unloading and then had to pack it all back up again. That was my biggest loss winter last year. I was really, because I was looking forward to thawing out, I was booked to fly up to Darwin for the Darwin Festival to play with a cabaret artist named Ruben Kay. Really excited about getting away, having a bit of a break, because it'd been a fairly busy year with teaching, not so much with playing. I don't know if you remember, it was that time when there was one case.
Yeah,
and then they shut it down. And that case came out the day before we were supposed to fly up there. So I heard it on the radio in the car and I was just literally screaming at my radio. Yeah, but look, there's been a time where gigs were just falling like dominoes, particularly weddings and things like that.
Yeah. Is there a positive that's come from the lockdowns that wouldn't have occurred otherwise for you?
In the beginning, like when we had that lockdown at the start of the pandemic, one of the schools I teach at, they wanted to keep their big band program alive for the students, and so they wanted to record some big band tracks. So they emailed me charts. And they wanted video as well, so the students could see and hear the drum track. Then it was emailed off to Dave McAvoy, who did the piano track. I think Lyndon Gray did the bass track. That experience I really enjoyed doing, because I hadn't really done a lot of home recording projects. That was a positive for me. It was a sort of a learning curve, particularly trying to sync, you know, recording onto Logic, trying to get a decent sound out of the drums. I mean, it was okay for me just to send the raw mix off to the guy who was going to engineer it. But, yeah, just trying to get the video to sync up with the audio was challenging, I found. But, yeah, that whole experience, I saw that as a positive, and I still got paid to do it when I wasn't gigging.
Did you switch to online learning?
Yeah, I enjoyed that initially. It was kind of a novelty to have a set up at home, and I made the experience for the students pretty good. They'll lucky that I went to the trouble of having alternate camera angles so they could see what I was doing. And, you know, it was good to have a decent setup and be organised. So drums through a laptop speaker don't sound very good. You know, I was miking up the drum kit and piping it down to them. So they had a great experience. And the experience for me coming back wasn't so great. But anyway, as I said, initially that was fun. After a while, I found online teaching experience a little soul-destroying. I found it exhausting. You've got to keep these students, they're just looking at a screen, so you've got to keep them engaged,
for the entire
lesson. In that setting, it's not really appropriate to have any kind of small talk, like saying, you know, what are you up to on the weekend? And it was pretty draining, I found.
At least it was something, I guess.
Absolutely. And we didn't have to do it for the amount of time that they had to in Melbourne. I can't imagine how they coped with that.
No. They were locked down for a very long time. That's John, if you could offer only one tip to a brand new drummer, what would it be?
I would say always take the opportunity to play with people that are better than you. In my formative years, I've found that really helpful, because you're being challenged by someone with confident sense of time, or, you know, a better idea of forms of songs. And if they're good musicians, you're more inclined to get out of your own instrument and listen to them and try and hear what's going on. Yeah, and they'll kind of kick your butt if you're not sort of pulling your weight with time and things like that. But I found that that's where I probably had leaps in my development, just playing with people that were better than me.
Yeah, excellent. Who are your top three local drummers?
I know this guy's getting a lot of hits. I'm going to say Ben Todd. He's just amazing. But technically, since he's not local at the moment, he's out of town, I'm going to use the next of kin rule and pass that baton on to his dad, Steve. I think Steve's just, having worked with Steve as a percussionist and having heard him play a lot, I think just as an all-rounder, he's a great player. And obviously an inspiration to his son. Ben is at the top, I reckon. Brad Pullane, he's up there as well. I love Brad's playing, just the sound he gets and the power that he has and his ideas. I hate that he's so multi-skilled as well, singing and guitar playing as well. And number three, I'd say probably Josh Baldwin was a jazz drummer. He's great. I mean, I know I'm going over the allotted number, but, yeah, Josh Baldwin and Angus Mason, I think, as jazz drummers, they're pretty phenomenal.
They are, yeah.
Because Lake Murray would be on that list as well. He's got such a deep pocket.
Yeah, he's great.
Generous of his time and stuff. And it's been very humbling for me to hear my name.
Well, it has been coming up, yes.
Speechless about that. It's, yeah, very humbling.
It just shows that people do appreciate you.
Yeah, yeah.
John, I want you to choose the three most important to you from the following five: groove, creativity, chops, technique, and time. Out of those five, which three are most important to you?
Well, I'm going to rule out chops. There's this famous Steve Gadd quote. I think it's feels bring the thrills, but the groove pays the bills. Yeah, so the groove is number one, always number one. And I think that kind of goes hand in hand with time. I know you can have a good sense of time without having a groove, but I don't think you can have a groove without having a good sense of time.
Mm-hmm.
You can't really have a groove without some level of technique, because if you have pretty bad technique, that's going to suffer. I would say creativity is probably in there as well.
Mm-hmm. If you could invite any musicians to play a concert with you anywhere in the world, you're on the kit, who would you call, where would it be held, and what genre would the band be performing?
Oh, I can only pick one genre. I'm going to say, the genres, I'm going to pick Latin jazz.
Mm.
Quite torn here. Pick Latin jazz and it would be with Michelle Camillo on piano and Anthony Jackson on bass. I might throw in a local legend named James Muller on guitar. And the reason I'm torn is because I'm also, like, I love the Hammond organ and I'd love Larry Goldings to be in there. So if it was more of a kind of a funkier thing, I'd pick Larry Goldings. But since you're pinning me down to one genre, I'm going to say Latin jazz, and it's Michelle Camillo, Anthony Jackson, James Muller. Since I was just talking about it before, I'm going to say Sydney Opera House. I've never played there, so can cross that one off now, in my head at least.
In your head, yeah, sure. Well, it's definitely a possibility. Excellent. John, is there something that you've really tried to play that you couldn't get right, or you weren't satisfied with the way that you played it?
There's plenty of things. I'm like every other musician I know. I mean, we're all our own worst critic. Rarely do I walk away from a performance being 100% happy with the way I played, which can be a blessing and a curse, I think. I think you need to take the time to pat yourself on the back when you have done well. Being self-taught and not being taught proper technique, I mean, my technique's okay. I think it's not amazing. I kind of wish I had learnt traditional grip, and not because it looks cool. I kind of get annoyed when some drum students want to learn traditional grip because it looks cool, or they think you can't be a real jazz drummer without playing traditional grip. My favourite jazz drummer, and a lot of people's favourite jazz drummer, Bill Stewart, is a match grip player. Ari Honig is another amazing jazz drummer that plays match grip. So I don't think that has anything to do with it. But there's some techniques I think with traditional grip are more suited to that grip, such as brush playing, the whole cross stick thing. So, yeah, that one aspect of my playing that I wish I had persevered with. It never really kind of clicked with me. And I guess also with the tendonitis issues that I've had, that was also not conducive to traditional grip for me. As far as playing, I like the Latin stuff. Like left foot clave rhythm is pretty advanced independence. And again, that's the sort of thing you need to spend a lot of hours shredding at. But when I sort of hear drummers like Horacio Hernandez doing it, you just think, man, that would be so much fun to be able to do that. But yeah, it's like anything, you've got to work at it and you've got to have perseverance. I could list a ton of things that I wish I could do better.
Fair enough. Do you ever get bored with your own playing?
Oh, all the time. Yeah. It's one of these things. Plenty of great jazz drummers have a bag of tricks, and not just jazz drummers. They seem to sort of pull out a lot of the same licks. Like I've listened to a lot of Philly Joe Jones and you hear a lot of the same ideas in his solos. It's just the way he, you know, it's kind of like computer coding. It's ones and zeros is how he kind of tacks them all together in different ways, makes each solo fairly unique for him. But if you had to break it down into smaller cells, you'd find that he's using a lot of the same ideas. He's not alone in doing that. I actually had a uni student a few years back who was doing his honours degree, and he did his thesis on that, how drummers were just using a handful of licks and combining them in different ways. So having said that, I kind of hear it in my own playing as well, and I think I get bored with using a lot of the same licks I have, particularly if I'm feeling, if I'm having writer's block, let's call it, during a solo. I often sort of go for the old favourites, you know, the party trick kind of fills. Yeah, but it's certainly something that I'd like to do, is to expand my vocabulary. But yeah, I often do find myself getting bored. And I guess it's me that I'm listening to all the time.
Fair enough.
Mm.
And you've been involved in a lot of fringe shows here, haven't you?
Yeah, over the years, been quite a few. I'm really excited about one, hopefully, still coming up. I mentioned him before, for the Darwin Festival. Reuben Kay is doing a show at Fringe this year in the Garden. Really looking forward to that. I just had one cancelled with Capital Swing, Luke Thompson singing, and a bunch of other local legends. I was looking forward to doing that gig, but yeah, that one's not happening now, sadly.
Mm.
I think the two busiest times of year for me have been Fringe Festival and the Cabaret Festival.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't get a Guernsey last year. It was slim pickings, I think. I've always looked forward to those two festivals.
How many bands and projects are you currently involved with on a regular basis?
The most regular at the moment has probably been, although I haven't had a gig for a few weeks now, Kim Perling Trio.
Yeah.
That's been fun. Obviously Kim on piano and Tim Bowen on bass.
Mm-hmm.
That's been a lot of fun. Favourite gigs to do is with Supernova. It's like a 12-piece band usually. That can vary. It's usually three or four singers, three or four or five horn players and a rhythm section. And we do, they've actually got a fringe show, but because of my Reuben Kay commitment, won't be on that one. Yeah, so they'll often do like tribute shows to a variety of bands such as Earth, Wind and Fire and Tower of Power, Steely Dan, Toto, etc.
Yeah.
So they're massively rewarding gigs, those ones. Other than that, I mentioned Capital Swing before. We sort of work sporadically. Mike Stewart Big Band. We did a CD launch recently after a recording. That was at the Lab. That was one of the more challenging gigs I've done for a while. It was all compositions by local arranger composers.
Excellent. What do you hope to have achieved before you lay down the sticks for the last time?
I'd like to be doing more of the same. I'm quite happy sort of plodding along doing what I'm doing at the moment. I think I'd really like to get back into writing again. So I had a fairly creative period, probably when I had more time at my sleeve to write original material, particularly when I was doing my honours degree. I was kind of writing a fair bit then because I wanted to include a fair bit of original material in my honours recital. Yeah, I'd like to write again. I'd also like to perhaps release a book one day, not a biography. That wouldn't be very riveting. Yeah, more like an instructional kind of book. I've sort of collected a few ideas and concepts over the years.
There was a time when a lot of drum teachers were releasing their own books.
Yeah, and they still do. I don't think it's as common because of the advent of YouTube. You know, everyone's got a YouTube channel now instead. Laurie Kennedy brought out a couple of great books.
Mm-hmm.
I did dabble with one of my own sort of desktop publications a few years back, and I tried selling it at John Reynolds, but it wasn't flying off the shelves. I actually kind of put it together just for my own practice, to be honest, but I'd kind of like to maybe have a second edition perhaps and expand on the ideas that I had in that book.
A bit tough for independent releases.
Yeah. Yeah, you are competing with some big publishers such as DCI and the like.
Mm. How did you become involved with the ASO?
I reckon around 2003, 2004 was my first gig with the ASO. Probably lucky to have a reputation of being a half-decent reader. That might have been why I got the gig. I remember the gig was in Elder Park and it was being televised, and this was my first gig with the ASO, and it was doing one of the most challenging things you could do. With an orchestra, it was a West Side Stories Symphonic Dances. It's like a 20-page piece, and I hadn't had a lot of experience working with conductors and yeah, I was having a hard time with it, but I must have made some kind of impression because I've been asked back to do quite a few performances with the ASO ever since. That was a memorable experience, but it was also one of the most stressful because I remember thinking, this must sound like crap. And I had it recorded and watched it back on TV. And I thought, oh, it doesn't sound too bad. At the time, I thought, man, I'm just not in time with the orchestra. But it's because of the sound delay from one side of the stage to the other when you know, playing with a 60-piece band. But every gig I've done with the ASO has been memorable because, again, it's another one of those pinch-yourself moments. To have the opportunity to play with a symphony orchestra, it's amazing.
Excellent. Before we end our chat today, I'm going to ask John 20 quick random questions, or as many as we can get through in the space of 2 minutes to close the interview. Are you ready, John?
I'm ready.
Okay. Your time starts now. What was the hardest song you learnt to play?
Oh, pass.
What is the best brand of drumsticks?
I use Vic Firth.
What was the first album that you purchased?
Probably a Kiss album. I'm going to say Destroyer, maybe.
True or false? Miles Davis's 1959 album, Kind of Blue, is still one of the top-selling jazz albums of all time.
True.
Name your favourite jazz standard.
I'm going to say Nature Boy.
Name a band you wish you'd seen perform live.
Either Prince or the Chick Corea Electric Band.
The most sticks that you've dropped during a gig.
I'm going to say about six.
Which American jazz drummer was a member of Miles Davis's first great sextet?
That was Philly Joe Jones.
Jimmy Cobb. What was the first concert that you went to?
Australian Crawl.
What is your favourite song to play?
Rosanna.
Your favourite TV show?
Family Guy.
Favourite venue to play in?
The Gov.
Vinyl or CDs?
Vinyl.
Name a genre that you don't like.
Grunge.
Name one thing that you cannot live without.
Oxygen.
What was the last concert that you went to?
Pass.
What is your biggest fear?
Rejection.
Your favourite book? We're out of time.
Oh, okay. That was good because I couldn't think of a book.
That was question 18. So you did quite well then.
Yeah, right.
Thank you once again, John, for joining me for the Banded About podcast today. You've been great to chat to, and I hope that everyone who listens finds this as enjoyable as I did.
Oh, thank you. Thanks for having me.
My pleasure, John. All information and links relating to today's interview can be found in the show notes. And if you've enjoyed listening to this podcast, please share the link with your friends. Until next week, it's goodbye from me, Di, Banded About, proudly supporting live music. Bye.
Bye.